What's up, everybody? Welcome to the Religion of Speed podcast, an automotive news and quote-unquote entertainment podcast about grassroots racing and car culture, where we give you ways to get out and have fun with cars. I am Matt Overstreet.
And I am Chris Huffman.
What do you think of the new intro, Chris?
I like it. I think we're definitely entertaining.
Yeah, we try. That's why I put it in quotes.
I think we're quote-unquote educational.
That's better. I should add that, quote-unquote educational. Because there's probably some shit I'm saying on this podcast. People are like, what? That's not.
Oh, some of the stuff I've said is definitely up for debate.
But hey, at least maybe then we have the entertainment part down.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, as long as people are laughing at us or with us, we don't really care.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. Just as long as you're laughing and you're learning about car shit, we're good.
Yeah.
And we got a lot of car shit to go through today.
Yeah, we've got a pretty full docket.
Yeah, it's been quite a couple weeks.
Yeah.
I'm still debating on whether to take this podcast weekly, and if it keeps up like this, we might just have to.
We might have to. That would be fun. We need to get out and do some interviews, too.
Yeah. Oh, man. There's just so much stuff to do.
Yeah.
But, hey, that's good. Keeps us busy.
Yep.
So, I'm just going to jump right into the car news because we got to get through some stuff, and there's a lot of cool shit going on. I was really excited about this because I thought this was just very interesting. So, Toyota made a Corolla hatchback race car with a hydrogen internal combustion engine.
So it runs off a fuel cell?
It's not a fuel cell vehicle.
It's not. It doesn't have a hydrogen fuel cell inside?
No. So I guess the way a lot of hydrogen powered cars before this were working is they convert the hydrogen into electricity and into an electric car.
Oh, okay. Okay.
This is still an internal combustion engine that is somehow using hydrogen in place of gasoline.
Oh, I really like this idea because, you know, I'm a big fan of internal combustion, even for all of its glaring inefficiencies.
Right.
You know?
And this would be a way to still keep internal combustion, but it says be emissions free.
Hey, I mean, we've got an abundant supply of hydrogen.
True.
Quite a bit more than we have fossil fuels.
Right. I mean, hydrogen is a little bit more, unpredictable.
Yeah, but that just keeps things exciting.
Yeah. So that's why I'm interested to see it in a race car, too, because, you know, you got to have more safety stuff in race cars.
Yeah, yeah. And they're also willing to take greater risks because they have the safety stuff.
Yeah.
So I wonder how much of this would translate to the road and how much the DOT would actually approve of.
Yeah, right. Well, this is taking place in Japan, which is where most hydrogen stuff is kind of being dealt with. Like, Toyota sells hydrogen powered cars, which are fuel cell electric cars.
Yeah, and I think Honda has one, too.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure they do.
Yeah.
You know, that Japan's kind of been investing in the hydrogen infrastructure a little bit more. I know America has no infrastructure for that shit. But, so Toyota released a short video of the sounds that the hydrogen-powered Corolla race car made. And it sounds pretty good.
Let's hear it.
Let's see if I can do this. Nope, that's off. I'm going to put that in post.
Okay, perfect.
Let's see here.
What is that, the exhaust?
It looks like a catalytic converter, but I'm not exactly sure.
It sounds like a hot hatchback.
Yeah, that sounds a lot like a gasoline-powered engine. Holy shit. Even the race car driver thinks it had a normal engine.
Right.
That's crazy. So that means it develops power and torque in the same way, it revs in the same way.
Right.
Doesn't make backfire detonation noises that are different from the gasoline-powered ones.
Right. But it still had a good, like, burble to it. It sounded just like a modern hot hatchback, honestly.
Yeah, yeah. I was expecting it to have, like, a more unique sound. But that sounds just like a gasoline engine.
Right.
That's fucking cool.
So, and if they can do that and still be, quote-unquote, zero emissions.
I want to know how they're injecting it and, like, what they're... Because the hydrogen can't be a liquid state. It's got to be in a gaseous state.
Right.
So, like, I want to know what the fuel injection looks like.
Yeah, I don't know. I would really love to see more about this, but it doesn't really seem like there is a ton. There may have been more information since this article came out, but you know, this is one of those things where it might make it to production. It might not make it to production. It's still very experimental. So,
but experiments like this are what get us to production.
Right.
And what would be awesome is you can produce hydrogen with electrolysis. And if you could do an onboard station on a car like that, that means you just fill up the tank with water and go.
I don't know how, I wonder if that would be very efficient, because I think it takes a lot of energy to do that conversion.
Yeah, to produce. Yeah. And are you using more energy to make the hydrogen than you're gaining by burning the hydrogen?
So you need a gasoline powered engine to produce the hydrogen to power the internal combustion engine,
which then produces electricity for the hybrid.
This is like the fucking weirdest way to go.
But if you look at the timing system on an internal combustion engine, it seems just as convoluted.
It does, yeah. But yeah, I don't know. I'm excited to see where this goes. Because if this means we could still have our it's funny because as electric cars get better, they're gonna leave gasoline cars in the dust.
Right.
But there's going to be this weird subset of people for a while. They're like, but it goes boom.
Right.
And we'll just keep buying these ones, you know?
I like that it harnesses the power of explosions.
Yeah.
You get bored when your car's quiet.
Right? So, yeah, who knows? Maybe we are not exactly done with internal combustion yet.
You know, I hope not. You know, it's... I love my gasoline cars. I love the internal combustion for all of its flaws, for all of its complexity.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you need so many more parts than you do for an electric car.
It's true. It's so much more complex.
So many interconnected systems that are constantly, constantly having issues. But
it goes, it makes goes pops boom. And crackles. And,
yeah. It just goes boom. And that's something that you don't get from anybody else.
Right.
But I would be interested to see if we could get to the point where, I mean, that's the whole thing, a car that runs on water. That's
right.
That's the dream.
That's been the conspiracy theory for how many years now?
Since that 70s show.
Yeah. I mean, it's been going since the 70s.
Yeah.
You know, I remember growing up seeing things on the internet, like the government doesn't want this guy to know this guy. He made a car that runs off water and... You're just like, no, it doesn't actually run off water.
It's like, you put a gallon of water in the tank and you can go half a mile.
Right.
Maybe.
It's like, yeah, there are ways. I mean, in North Korea, they have vehicles that run off wood.
Wow.
Yeah. So they make what they call wood gas. And pretty much, I'm going to screw this up. They burn the wood in a special way. I think in a way that doesn't completely, it like makes a lot of smoke. I think, but the smoke still has some energy left in it.
Okay, so they're like removing carbon from the wood.
Kinda, yeah.
Okay. Well,
they're just making wood into like a smoke or a powder or something like that. Not powder, like a smoke, and then injecting that into an internal combustion engine, and it does work.
Huh.
Yeah. If you just get on YouTube and look for wood gas engine, there's people that have converted like Briggs and Stratton engines and stuff to them. The thing is, though, it is insanely inefficient. They make it makes 1/100th the horsepower of what gasoline makes or something.
So they're like clear cutting forests to make this happen in North Korea.
Yeah.
And they'll probably destroy all their trees before they even perfect the technology.
Probably. I mean, it's more of a desperation thing in North Korea than it is like a, oh, this is better. It's more just people are like, we need to move goods and our government sucks. So.
Yeah. No one will trade with us.
Right. So, but those things do exist and there are different ways to fuel internal combustion. I mean, like you said, technically hydrogen is just from water. So,
yeah.
But the old way of just like, there's these two, I remember the car came into a shop I worked at one time and it had like two mason jars with some tubes and stuff like that. And he told us he got like 99 miles to the gallon and none of us believed him.
But this was something he'd hooked up to an existing gasoline engine?
Yeah.
There was that thing. Yeah, that thing that happened. I think it might have been the guy in the 70s you were talking about. He found some way to hook something up to his carburetor and he got up to like 70 miles to the gallon. And I remember that there was another guy who you could tell in the interview, this guy was not the brightest dude.
Yeah.
But he's like, yeah, I looked up his designs and I was like, I have an old car in the yard. And he managed to get 40 to the gallon. And apparently when Shell bought the rights to the other guys and buried it, This is the whole conspiracy theory. And they came to this other guy who had figured this out, and they like bought his car from him. You know, they'd already bought the rights to it, but they basically put a gag order and everything on this guy.
Yeah.
So the whole theory was that, you know, the gas companies, the oil companies have the ability to produce an engine that can do 100 miles to the gallon, but they don't want that.
Right.
Because they want us buying gas.
Yeah, I'm convinced that is just a conspiracy theory.
Yeah, because with electric cars proliferating as they are, and all these companies saying that they're going to go to electric engines, you know, that means that they, you know, that whole market share is going to go belly up.
Right.
And better to have 100 miles per gallon engine than nothing, if right. that's your whole business.
Yeah. I think what those things were doing in the 70s and stuff, they may have been doing a little bit of something, because I'm pretty sure they're just using electrolysis to make hydrogen out of water, pretty much.
Yeah, so it takes a lot of energy, like you were saying,
right,
to make that work.
You know, there's no such thing as free energy.
That's yeah.
basic thermodynamics.
Yeah, you can't create or destroy it.
Right.
Yeah.
So it's got to be coming from somewhere.
Yeah.
And it's one of those things, like, on a small scale, or maybe it does kind of work, or something, but it just doesn't work on big scale.
Yeah, it won't scale up.
Right.
Won't be mass production. Which, I mean, we're not even there with electric cars yet.
Right.
Like, yeah. we're getting there.
Yeah.
But we're not there to the point where it's a viable option to replace everything we do.
No, it's still too expensive.
And the batteries are still too heavy for it to work in aircraft.
Yeah.
I am excited to see self-driving semi-trucks.
Mm-hmm.
Self-driving electric semi-trucks. I feel like that alone is going to make the air so much cleaner.
Yeah, probably.
It's going
to... Because you can just run them 24/7.
Yeah. And I mean, especially if we found a way to charge them while they were driving.
Right.
Which I don't know how feasible that is, but...
I'm just... Okay, so we need a way to charge these electric things while we're driving. Well, let's put a little line above the road that they can connect to. Well, how are they going to steer themselves? Let's put them on tracks. Fuck, we invented trains.
We reinvented trains. Which, that's the best part, is... We wouldn't need the semi-trucks if we had adequate rail,
right?
In this yeah. country.
But rail, that's an actual conspiracy. That was a real, like...
Yeah.
The automotive businesses conspired to bring down rail so that way they could build more roads and promote their vehicles more.
And that's what they did. And now in America, a country that once said its own destiny was to build a railway from one coast to the other.
True, yeah.
You can no longer hop on a train in the East Coast and ride it to the West Coast.
Nope.
Yeah, I looked at
Is there none?
I looked at the Amtrak maps.
Yeah.
And there's some crazy loop you can take, but I think you still would have to take a bus from one point in Louisiana to another, if I'm not mistaken. But there's no direct line.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it's amazing. Like,
we've made movies about this.
We did. We subjugated two other cultures.
Yes.
Just to make this happen.
And then
actually,
we're like,
no, three. You've got African slaves, you've got Chinese slaves, and you have Native Americans.
Yeah.
All subjugated in the name of making this railway. And now you can't even ride a rail across the country.
We don't want to play with it anymore.
Yeah. It's like, we don't want this toy anymore. We have big trucks now.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
It's like, why would you want a train horn when you could have a Jake break?
I mean, they're both kind of cool.
They are both cool.
But... No, that's like the most American thing ever. Just like we just drive these civilizations and these people into the ground so that way we can have something cool, and then we get tired of it and we just move on to the next thing and don't do anything about what we did before.
No. It's like, oh, well, we're pulling up railroad ties and recycling the metal. Well, what are you doing with the metal? We're making trucks.
Oh, by the way, we need to buy more of your land now.
Yeah.
Quote unquote, buy more of your land so that we can build roads for the trucks.
It's like, we know we told everybody to move west, but now we need you on these reservations.
Right.
Like, you're in our way again.
Chris, we're getting political again.
We are.
This is how it starts. How do we start with hydrogen powered Toyotas and move on to the subjugation of the Native Americans?
We really need a political podcast.
Apparently we do.
Yeah.
Oh, we got a lot of opinions we need to get out. And speaking of opinions I need to get out, I think this is a better AE-86, Ultimate AE-86 compared to Daiyo Shihara's.
You know, I want to see this build finished, but But, you know, I'm obviously, you know, I'm a huge Honda engine fan.
I know.
I think if you made a top five list of the best four-cylinder engines ever made, the best NA four-cylinder engines ever made, Honda would own all five spots.
We've talked about this, yes.
And so I want to see these two cars go head-to-head.
So what we're talking about is, of course, Dai Yoshihara, we talked about last week, has his Type R-powered 8.6 now. And there is a shop in Japan now, which of the best name ever, Daddy Motor Works.
Oh, that's a great name.
Right. I love how Japan uses the English language.
Yeah.
They are putting a GR Yaris engine in an 8.6.
So they're keeping it in the family. They're keeping it Toyota.
It's keeping it Toyota.
Yeah.
In fact, everything on this is going to be Toyota, but it's going to be... So it's a ZN6 Generation 8.6 transmission. Wow. Altezza diff. Rear disc brakes from some other Toyota, Astemia, I don't know, a crown rear end. Like, it's all Toyota parts, except for an NA Miata steering rack for some reason. But anyways, that's why I'm thinking this is the ultimate 8.6, because it is still an actual Toyota.
It does have all the Toyota DNA, except for the Mazda steering rack, which we can forgive that.
Yeah, you know, sometimes you just got to make do with... Like, yeah. I'm sure they said the GR Yaris engine is actually, like... What, like 13 centimeters taller than the 8.6, the 4AGE?
Wow, only 13 centimeters.
That's kind of a lot when you're trying to fit it under a hood, you know?
So will the hood not close?
Yeah, I don't know exactly if they're going to do like a hood scoop or if they're just managing to make it fit somehow. But
still, though, only 13 centimeters with three decades of innovation, that's not bad.
But this is also only a 1 liter three-cylinder.
Oh, really? Is the Yaris
is it 1.3?
I have no idea it was that tiny.
Oh, no, 1.6. Sorry. It is a 1.6.
So it's the same size as the 4AGE.
Yeah.
Same displacement.
Yeah, same displacement. Sorry, I thought that was... I'm thinking of the freaking Ford three-cylinder in my head now. But yeah, it's a brand new GR Yaris long block from Toyota, which apparently you can buy.
So they sell those now.
Apparently.
So this is where I really want to see the comparison. Which crate engine is cheaper?
Right.
The GR Yaris motor or the Type R motor, because we're talking about two turbocharged four-cylinder engines. What's the power output on this thing?
I don't know what he's going to be, you know, getting at eventually. This car is still in build phase. He's trying to get it done for the 2022 Tokyo Auto Salon.
Oh, cool.
Did I say Tokyo? Tokyo.
I think you said it right.
I don't know. I don't remember. but yeah, he's got a bunch of stuff on YouTube for Daddy Motorworks doing the build and stuff. The only difference I was going to, before I got distracted there for a second, the difference between, you know, it's a GR Yaris long block.
Oh, okay.
But it's not a crate engine. Unlike the Type R engine, which is a crate engine, like here you go, here's everything, here's the ECU. You know, this is going to run a Link Fury X ECU. So
they're both running Link ECUs.
Is the other one running Link ECU?
I think the other one is running a Link ECU.
Oh, well, that's interesting.
Because I believe, and I know I could be mistaken about this, that the only company to crack the K20C1 so far has been Link.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm sure Honda has got it.
Supposedly they haven't yet, but that was as of the last article I read.
Okay.
I don't know if it's true yet.
I guess, yeah, the Honda article I was reading was for the 1.5 four-cylinder, the SI engine.
Oh, okay. Yeah, but supposedly the K20 C1 is, it must run very different software because it's turbocharged.
Yeah.
So I'm interested to see how the other ECU tuners handle this, because it's a Honda. So you know they're going to keep trying until they crack it.
Yeah, and I mean, especially with the proliferation of that crate engine now.
Yeah.
I mean, there's plenty of builds out there.
So I wonder, with this long block, I wonder how much it costs to actually put one together, to buy a head and buy the manifolds, buy everything, and actually get all the accessories together and get a complete engine.
Yeah, I don't know. I think it looks like he's just doing the long block and the turbo assembly and then doing his own intake and stuff. Because, I mean, you're converting it to rear-wheel drive anyways, so
right.
You're probably going to have to do a custom intake.
You're definitely going to need a custom exhaust manifold.
Oh, for sure. Or, well, downpipe. But it sounds like, you know, exhaust manifold and turbo are probably all one assembly in that one, I'm guessing.
Okay. So the turbo is just part of the exhaust manifold.
Yeah. I haven't looked at this engine. Let's see if I can find a picture of it. But, you know, most modern engines have the manifold, if you will, built into the cylinder head. So it's just a port coming out the head where your like downpipe would bolt to, basically. It doesn't have an exhaust manifold. It's built into the cylinder head. So that looks like intake side.
And most of the turbochargers are also built into those modern exhaust manifolds.
Yeah, it's all just... Can't really tell in that picture. Cannot tell what's going on there. Okay, so it does have a little manifold assembly on it. Found an article from Speed Hunters. So if you want to see more pictures of this GR Yaris 86, Speed Hunters, of course, already beat us to it. But look how tiny that engine is in that engine bay.
And that's a small... I mean, it's a big bay for a car its size.
Yeah.
Because of the age, but that's not a huge amount of space.
No, it's not. You know, you look at S2000 swaps in there and it fills up the engine bay.
Dai's car definitely has a lot less space in the bay.
Yeah, I guess he's... Daddy Motorworks is going to be doing a V-mount setup in the front here.
Oh, cool. So is this is going to be a drift car?
Probably. Okay. I mean, it's going to be a Tokyo Auto Salon car, which is kind of like a SEMA car. You know, it's just what's all the coolest shit we can put on this car.
Yeah. It's like, let's do a V-mount. You going to drift it? I don't know, but we can.
Right.
I'm interested to see how much space the Altezza rear end takes up because the 86 is a solid axle.
Oh, true.
So they're having to go with an independent rear suspension setup on this. That's going to completely change out the handling characteristics.
Look how there's already a turbo upgrade for the GR Yaris. Like, that's freaking amazing. It didn't take long at all, did it?
No. Well, how long has it been out?
A year?
Yeah, that's awesome.
Maybe not even. But, yeah. In my dream world, hopefully, after Daddy Motorworks gets done with this 86, him and Dai,
Yes.
Is Best Motoring still doing their thing in Japan? Are they still making videos?
I don't know, but if they do, they should do this. I'll even take a Hoonigan video.
Yeah.
I want to see this.
To give both 86s to
Takeano.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And have him toge them.
Yes.
And see which one's better.
Because Taka is the ultimate authority on that.
He is.
He was the last drifter to drift an AE86 in the Pro Series.
Yeah.
And I think eventually even that ended up being a little much. But I don't think Negan fields a car anymore.
No.
If I'm not mistaken.
I don't know.
Because I know that he drifted for Negan, which for a while, that was because of that. Negan was the only company making the AE86 parts.
I remember the coilovers. Negan was the only place to get them for a long time.
And they were the only place I could find a Panhard bar.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Huh. The only one that was not the only aftermarket company that made one.
Oh, that's crazy.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think that'd be the dream, though. Have him drive both of those cars and tell us which one's better.
Yes. And he has very strong opinions on these.
Yes.
I heard him drive, he drove the new 86 chassis, and he's like, oh, I don't like it. Drives like 240.
Well, yeah, it's got independent rear suspension, bro.
Yeah.
The new car.
Which he may not like this one because of the independent rear suspension. He's a huge fan of the solid axle. And if you like to drift, I mean, there's nothing that slides quite like a solid axle car.
True. But I mean, there's a reason everybody's switching or everybody uses independent now. So
absolutely. If I were given the choice, I'd take independent.
Right.
But it's like the guys who drive the Porsche 911s around the track. You know,
yeah.
Even though the rear engine setup is fundamentally wrong.
Right.
They'll have nothing else.
Yes, that's true.
I'm interested to see what kind of suspension they run in this.
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm going to have to subscribe to them on YouTube, and I'll keep us updated on this build. Because, I mean, everybody knows the GR Yaris is my favorite car in the world right now.
Yeah.
And I love 86s because initial D. So, hey, best of both worlds.
And they're so much fun. I mean, a solid axle car with a wheelbase that short, even when I had mine with an open diff, it would go full on sideways at like 4 miles an hour.
Yeah, I believe it.
It's the perfect car to learn to drift in.
Yeah.
Because you can go to just these extreme driving attitudes at almost no danger.
Right.
It teaches you a lot. But, you know, I have to go almost twice as fast to get my S14 to behave the same way.
Right.
Which is, it says quite a bit. You know, my S14 has a lot more grip, which means it's more usable. But just for a drift trainer,
yeah.
I can't think of a better car.
It's too bad 86s now cost $35,000 or something.
It makes me really sad that I sold mine.
Yeah. Because you would have made money on it, or just because you want it again and now you can't afford it?
Both.
Okay.
Probably because I would have sold it, bought another one.
Yeah.
Because when the market's that volatile, it's just fun.
Yeah.
You know, just to
it's
just
like
to
playing
be,
with stocks.
It is.
But cars.
But you can't drift around in a stock.
It's true.
Yeah. All you can do is stare at the market and feel anxiety.
Right? This way, well, and then again, though, when you have a car and then it becomes worth something, then you just go to the garage and stare at it with anxiety, like, oh my God, am I going to drive this thing?
Yeah. Yeah. When I take my 240 to the track now and it's like, people are like, don't wreck that S14.
Like, right.
It's like, man, when I bought this to wreck it.
Yeah. That was the goal.
That was the goal. I bought this to be my missile. So if I wrapped it around something, I wouldn't care as much.
And now you care.
And now I care too much.
Yep. All right. I don't have a good segue to this, so we're just going to change subjects.
Okay.
I'm trying my best with the segues to keep it flowing.
Yeah.
But there's no way we can go from what you just said to SCCA approving electric vehicles in autocross.
No, there's not really a good segue there.
No. But hey, SCCA has a electric autocross class.
Which is cool because this is exactly what we were talking about with the Model 3 designed to build the designed for the Pikes Peak hill climb.
Mm-hmm.
Because electric cars have so much torque and they're so efficient,
right,
that it's going to get to the point where internal combustion can't compete and they need their own class.
Yes.
And
I mean, and I think I brought it up then that, you know, that was kind of already the case here with autocross, that the Model 3s, you know, you just put them on sticky wide tires and they kind of dominate.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's cool that they gave them their own class, and this is for all electric cars. They actually have a list here.
I'm not going to go through,
but if you ever want to know what all the electric cars are right now, this is SCCA's electric vehicle class rules. Gives you a nice list.
The BMW i3. Can you imagine watching one of those autocross?
Right. I mean, it is a carbon fiber monocoque shell.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, it's actually a super advanced car. It just looks funny and is on motorcycle tires. But can you imagine that thing on like some 275 slicks?
Yeah, some really wide tires. That would be so cool. I wonder if it would roll over.
It might.
It seems kind of top heavy.
Yeah, probably. Well, I don't know.
I mean,
because all the weight's in the bottom.
That's true. It's just the way it's shaped.
Yeah, but I mean, I think that's just all basically just some carbon fiber roof. It's probably not that top heavy.
So maybe that means you could mount a spoiler on it and get some serious downforce.
Right. I do like how the Nissan Leaf is in this class with the Mustang Mach-E and, you know, Fisker Karma and Jaguar I-Pace and the Nissan Leaf.
It does seem like there's definitely going to be some top contenders for this class.
Yeah.
And that a lot of these are just lumped in for electric cars. But, you know, maybe we'll see a fast and a slow electric car class.
Yeah. I mean, this is a provisional class right now. So they will not be running these at nationals.
Okay.
This is just for local clubs
to
have a rule set. Because yeah, like a Taycan is not going to compete with like the Kona.
Yeah.
You know, or the Ioniq EV. Like, well, let me rephrase that. It's going to dominate them.
Yeah.
I worded that wrong to make it seem like the Kona would be faster than the Taycan.
It won't be a competition.
we've been talking a lot on this podcast, which I was not expecting when I started, about electric cars and racing.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's happening really fast. This has been the year of the electric car for sure. And the transition is happening really quick. So it's good to see people like SCCA keeping up and bringing those people on board.
Yeah. Because while I wouldn't exactly call them grassroots, just because it's a little more expensive, it's a little more difficult to run SCCA than something like Track Attack.
Well, and all these cars, for the most part, aren't very grassroots at this point either.
No.
They're very expensive vehicles.
Maybe a used Leaf.
There was actually a guy I was talking to at Track Attack yesterday in FB with a hail-damaged Leaf.
He ran in it yesterday?
Yeah.
How'd he do?
I don't know. I have to look that up, actually. 1 minute. So, yeah, and his Nissan Leaf, he got 8th out of 12. Like, that is not...
Every other car in the class is a Honda.
Yeah, it is too. Yeah, so he got a 66 flat. I mean, my best time was a 62.2 in my Fiesta ST. That's track prepped.
Yeah, and this, you said he just showed up with a normal hail damaged Leaf.
Yeah.
So that says quite a bit.
Yeah, that's what I was telling him. Is like, well, you got the torque. And he was actually complaining. He's like, yeah, but it's almost too much. It likes to light up the tires.
So that means with some good rubber underneath it.
Right.
And maybe a giant, comically big front splitter.
Right. And he was saying something, which I didn't ask about because I was getting ready to leave. But they make tunes for the Nissan Leaf now?
Interesting. I wonder what a tune entails for an electric car.
I don't know. Like, I wouldn't think...
Is it like overclocking your phone?
Right? It's got to be like overclocking. I don't understand how it would work, but like there are things. I mean, this doesn't look legit at all.
Yeah, these look like toys.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I want to look into that more because I've been wondering that too about... And we'll get into this a little more, I guess, in viewer email section.
Yeah.
About like the tunability of EVs and stuff like that.
But I just wonder, is that going to... I mean, you've already got the fire risk.
Right?
So if you're overclocking to the point where these batteries are putting out more heat, what are we going to see?
A lot of fires?
Yeah.
Probably. Which is probably why the SCCA in their rules, they... Suspension stuff, it's a lot of street and street touring rules.
Okay.
So they do allow some suspension changes and stuff like that, brake changes. But in this class, there are no changes permitted to electronic management systems or their programming. Batteries, computers, everything's got to be stock.
Which makes sense because the SCCA takes place primarily in mall parking lots and community college parking lots around the country.
We don't need burning stuff down with somebody's experimental tune on their Nissan Leaf.
Well, they're already on the ragged edge of uninsurable at that point.
Yeah, right. They really are.
So if you add a thermal runaway fire risk to that.
Like I said, actually, we'll hold off because we're going to get back to that subject in the viewer email.
But I think it's cool. I'm glad to see this happening. You know, electric cars, they need their own class until it gets to the point where they're the standard and internal combustion cars are in their own class.
Right.
You know.
I had that thought when I was at the track yesterday. I was sitting in my car waiting to go out on track, sitting in the pits of PPIR there.
Yeah.
The track attack pits. So you just see all these cars. And it was like, they were mostly newer cars. I'd probably say all of them were 2000 or newer.
Yeah, you know. This is in your class, the FA class, right?
This was just looking over everything. Actually, I think I was looking out at RB and GT and stuff like that. But I was like, man, in another 20 years, you're not going to see any of these cars on track.
Yeah.
When's the last time you saw like a 40-year-old or 30-year-old car out on track?
Yeah, I mean,
they're not as common. Well,
I had one of the oldest cars out there when I brought my 240.
Right.
I had the only S14 out there.
Yeah.
And, you know, I was being dominated by all these Miatas.
Yeah. But yeah, I had that thought. It's just like, man, like another 20 years, nobody's going to really remember the Fiesta ST. I'm going to be doing that thing I was talking to you about with like, look at all these old American cars that they used to make.
Pulling up a Google image and kids are going to be like, wow, grandpa.
Yeah, exactly. And it made me think about how fast the automotive world really moves.
Yeah. Once one company proves something to be economically viable, everybody else does it, and it's in the blink of an eye.
Yeah.
You know, we saw variable valve timing poke its head out in the 90s.
Yeah.
And now you can't buy a new car without it.
No. There's no way you can meet emission standards without it.
Yeah, and make any sort of meaningful power.
Right.
I mean, the CVT, for all of its faults.
Everybody's adopting it.
Everyone's adopting it because it's so cheap to build that they'd rather replace two in your car than put in a normal traditional automatic.
Not only that, they are technically more efficient for gas mileage.
Because,
significantly,
because you remain at that ideal RPM.
Right.
Until the CVT breaks.
Until they decide that customers don't like the way the CVT feels, so they make it shift and just completely ruin all the efficiency of it.
Which is the funniest thing in the world. It's like, well, it feels like it's slipping. Well, it's not.
But I don't like it.
I don't like it. I want it to shift. It doesn't have anything to shift.
Yeah. But I want it to shift. It's like, fine, now it shifts. Well, now my car gets worse gas mileage. Oh, my God. I can't deal with you right now.
You literally complained about my innovation. I programmed around it. Yeah. I made it worse just for you. And now it's breaking all the time.
Yeah. Shocker. Not that that's the only reason why they break, but... speaking of break, I need some water, so we're going to take a break.
Let's do it.
And then when we come back, we're going to do something I never thought we would do on this podcast.
I honestly never thought we would cover this topic, but stick around to see us eat our words.
Right? All right, we are back, and I got to say, Chris, there's something I find hilarious about this. We are sitting here drinking wine because I didn't have beer. So, you know, wine is the most pretentious of the alcohols.
Yeah, one could argue.
And we're about to talk about the most unpretentious thing in motorsports.
I think this is great. Let's put our pinkies up.
Right, and talk about NASCAR. So this is definitely something, like I said, I'd never expect talking about NASCAR on this podcast. But they are making sweeping changes, and I honestly think this might trickle down to grassroots racers eventually.
You know, they're saying that these changes are actually reducing the cost for building for these teams, mm-hmm. which means that NASCAR can become more accessible.
A little more. I mean, it's still going to be, you know, your top echelon.
Yeah.
But there are plenty of people out there right now that are using ex-NASCAR chassis because they are, they're still a legit race car.
Yeah.
It's a tube frame V8 race car.
Yeah.
You know, yes, the technology was a little old in some places. And this new next gen car, which we're going to talk about in one brief second here, is going to address a lot of that. But like Tommy Boyle, their Pikes Peak car was an ex-Furniture Row Racing, which was based in Denver. There was an ex-Furniture Row Racing circle track car or NASCAR car.
Wow. And they built it for Pikes Peak.
That they, yeah, they swapped in a turbo LS engine.
Okay.
Because, of course.
Right. It's an LS engine. Yeah.
Why wouldn't you? And they competed at Pikes Peak and completed the run and everything. So, and I think, I don't know if they ran that last year or not, but it's still around.
Like, that says quite a bit. I wonder how it did. It probably needed quite a bit of downforce to make a solid axle work, putting the power down on the uphill like that.
I don't, I mean, it had a wing on it, but it was nothing outlandish.
Wow.
You know, but the point is, you know, when the NASCAR teams are done with these chassis, they eventually just wind up for sale somewhere. If you, there's a website called racingjunk.com.
Which, oh, okay, I need to spend some time on this site.
Unfortunately, it doesn't get as much use these days as it did like, you know, 7-ish years ago. But you can still go on there and find ex-NASCAR chassis. And they're only like, I say quote unquote only, but you can find them for like 20 G's.
Which, yeah, considering that it was a $1 million race car at one point.
Like, yeah. Yeah, it's a steal. So the point is, now that NASCAR is going with these next-gen race cars, which are just completely revamping the sport. This yes. is going from an antique car to a race car from 20 years ago instead. They're still behind, but they're making some sweeping changes. Real brief, I'm going to run down the changes I can remember. First and foremost, independent rear suspension.
Which is huge.
Just a massive change.
Yeah, that's a huge change.
With a transaxle.
Yep, rear-mounted transaxle, just like the Corvette.
Yep. Larger, I think these are 17 or 18-inch aluminum center lock wheels.
Okay, so center lock, that's going to cut down on the pit times.
Yep, no more of your NASCAR pit stop with the beow, 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 beow.
Yeah.
Which kind of sucks.
That it's was, just going to be beow, beow, beow.
Yeah. It's going to become more Formula One-ish.
Yeah.
You know?
But it'll bring it into this century.
Right. Yeah. I mean, these changes were
or at least last century.
Exactly. I mean, the transaxle, that's pretty new. But yeah, independent rear suspension, not exactly anything, you know, that amazing. They're making changes to the body regulations so that way the cars can more closely resemble their road-going counterparts.
And what I didn't realize was that the original, the current generation car, which, you know, in 2012 was called the car of tomorrow, which yeah. is now really ironic. Yeah. It's the car of yesterday.
Yes.
It was designed like an airfoil to literally pull the car to the left, or I guess you would say to the right. It, as you went around a corner, the aerodynamics actually pulled the car back into line.
Huh, I didn't know
so
that.
Not to the right, I should say. It pulled it to the left because as you go around the corner, the G-forces force right. you to the outside wall. The body was asymmetrical before, and it acted as an airfoil that pulled it to the left away from the wall to help correct the G-forces you encountered when you went around the corner, which made NASCAR actually more like Formula One than we thought.
Right. I mean, don't get me wrong. When it comes down to it, the technology in NASCAR to go those speeds around those tracks with that technology.
Absolutely.
Was like, or with those parts was amazing. Like they engineered the shit out of those.
Yes.
But it got to the point where, kind of like with Formula One, if you wanted to be at the top, there was a very specific formula and very specific expensive things you needed to do.
Right, because you were so regulated and there were only so many things you could do.
Yeah.
So it limits you to this narrow pipeline that once one team figures it out, everybody's going to do it.
Yeah. So these sweeping changes are going to mix that up, of course. The other things they're doing with those with that body, which I don't know, they're going to figure out some way to do aerodynamic weird shit with these bodies, because they always do, that are still within the limits.
Yeah.
But it's not a one-piece. I'm pretty sure the old ones were like one-piece fiberglass bodies.
So yeah, they weren't. It was a steel space frame.
Yeah. But the body, though, yeah, I'm pretty sure it was one,
fiberglass.
I'm sure. I thought it was one, maybe like three pieces.
I know it was asymmetrical, though. Yeah. So I'm not sure how many pieces the actual final body was.
But this one is actually going to have carbon fiber reinforced panels, like multiple panels.
Which the old one, you know, people said that it was a carbon fiber monocoque, but this one still isn't even
a carbon fiber monocoque. No, these are still tube frames.
Yeah, we're still looking at a steel space frame.
In fact, that's one of the big things, is now every frame is going to come from the same manufacturer. There's some place, and I believe it was in Michigan, honestly, is going to be making all of the frames for them. And they're going to be three-piece frames. You're going to have your center driver cockpit and bolt-on front and rear subframe, basically.
Okay. Okay.
So the idea of that is, when you crash, you can just replace the front part or the back part. In the past, that was pretty much an entire frame.
You had to just total out the whole thing.
Yeah, because it would tweak it in such ways that you would never get it back to normal.
Right.
So that was one of their ideas to kind of keep costs down, but that also means every team has like people on board that make their chassis.
Yeah.
And those jobs are gone.
Yeah, and I mean this is also going to make it a little bit more fair, though, because you know that some of these chassis guys knew some tricks and were doing things that the other guys weren't doing to save weight. So it's going to be interesting to see how standardizing these chassis goes, because if everybody's starting out with the same thing, they can't cut weight that way. They can't shave stuff. They can't. I mean, granted, people are still going to modify these chassis once they get them, you know, quote unquote.
I don't know if they're, you know, they will, but I don't know if they're allowed to.
Yeah. Well, if you ain't cheating, you ain't winning, right?
Right. And NASCAR has always been one of the greats for cheating.
Right. I mean, it was started by bootleggers trying to run from the police.
Right.
Which is the best origin story for a racing series there is.
Yeah. What's Formula One that has nothing on that?
No.
Another thing they're doing is, apparently currently, I didn't know this, they didn't have adjustable shocks. So if you wanted to change shock dampening, you had to replace the shocks. And apparently in the trailer, they just had like 100 shock absorbers of different dampening values.
That's insane, and it drives up the cost.
Right. So now they're going to have four-way adjustable Ohlins dampers.
Wow.
Shocker.
Yeah. Shocker for the shocks.
So I think that's kind of a lot of the big changes. You still have your V8 engine.
We're looking at a sequential gearbox as
well. Oh, it is sequential. Yes.
Yeah. So we're going from a four pattern, an H pattern, four speed to a, I'm not sure how many gears.
Oh, it's actually, it's a five speed.
Okay. So a five speed, sequential gearbox, which I think this alone is going to shake things up.
It will. A lot.
Yeah.
On the ovals, probably not as much, because you're just going to get up to top gear and remain in top gear.
Yeah.
But also read in this article that NASCAR is going to be adding more and more road courses.
That's going to be cool. And with this new symmetrical setup, with the independent rear suspension, with the transaxle, that's going to really change things up when we're not just talking about turning left.
Right.
Yeah. It's going to make a big difference.
NASCAR is really trying, and I give them credit. They're really trying hard to attract new fans.
Which they should. I mean, the thing, it's been the same for so long. The fact that we're just now getting away from solid axle and four-speed transmissions is huge.
Yeah.
I mean, it puts them behind a lot of the other motorsports. But that being said, with the pace of progress, like we were talking about, with electric cars proliferating so quickly, it'll be cool to see somebody clinging on to the old school a little bit.
Right.
But at least they're moving forward enough in a way that's going to obviously make a lot of older fans angry, but it's going to bring in a lot of younger new fans.
Yeah.
Which is a good thing. I mean, a rear-mounted transaxle with independent rear suspension is essentially a Corvette.
Yeah, pretty much.
Which, bring me a NASCAR fan that doesn't love the Corvette.
Very true. Very true. yeah, I can't believe reading this article. Sorry, to go back. It's just like how antique these cars really were. You know, they were running a 305 section tire on those old cars.
Wow.
And now they're going to be at a 365.
They're going to have so much more grip.
It's so much more.
And that's one of the things people complained about in 2012 when they switched to the current chassis, was that they actually cut the top speed of them by about 10 miles an hour, 10 to 15.
Oh, did they?
They were about 201 mile an hour cars, and the car of yesterday was about 185 mile an hour car.
Okay.
So it'll be interesting to be able to get this speed back and do it in a safe way, because that was part of the reason they cut it, was because people were dying in accidents.
Yeah.
Like the wrecks were really dangerous. And with something like this, you got wider tires. You've got independent rear suspension, so you can adjust the right side tire, which is the big NASCAR thing.
Right.
They always do the right side tire adjustments because they're constantly steering left. But with a solid axle, you can't adjust the right side tire without fucking with the left side.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, you can, but it's tied together a lot more.
Yeah, it's going to affect it in some way.
Yeah.
Now you can put whatever camber you want on that crazy tire. A lot of these NASCARs are probably going to look like they're stanced from one side. You can
put camber on it.
Yeah. Here you go.
It's a solid axle. You can't put camber on it. You
can't put any camber at all. You're right. Yeah. If you were to lean it at all, you'd be putting negative or positive camber on the other side.
Right.
So they can do things that they have and never been able to do.
And that's going to be really interesting to me. And I might start paying attention when these cars come out, because it's just like when Formula One makes sweeping changes, which ironically are also making next year.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. They're going to be just sweeping changes across all the big league racing. Different teams come out on top.
Yes, because the other teams have figured out those new ways to do things sooner.
Exactly.
I mean, not only are you going to have these drivers, like you said, I mean, it's probably not going to matter so much with the sequential, but it is going to make a difference.
Right.
I mean, heel towing in a sequential is going to be very different from doing it in an H pattern.
Yeah.
And having five gears as opposed to four, having that extra gear, you know, and having those ratios in between each other, it's going to make a big difference. And, you know, it sounds subtle, but when you add up this many subtle things in a sport where everything is standardized, it makes a big difference. It's going to shake things up.
And like you said, all these guys, you know, all their suspension engineers and stuff were used to doing solid axle rear and stuff. And now they have to get used to this and different weight distributions. It's going to be complete changes. And what makes me most excited about this, not just from a fan standpoint of like, hey, I might actually start watching NASCAR again, is, like I said, on about racing junk, all this stuff is actually more modern parts. So there's going to be a point where, according to the NASCAR team, that X-Track sequential transmission or transaxle, we're done with it. We don't want it anymore. We're selling it.
Yeah, in 2030.
Oh, man. There's just going to be... Like, think about for drift cars.
Yeah.
For custom drift cars and stuff. Like, cool, I could put a freaking used NASCAR transaxle in this thing now.
Yeah, and I know it'll be able to stand up to whatever power I want.
Right? I could put in NASCAR brakes now, because the brakes are actually becoming modern with 6-piston front calipers and 4-piston rear calipers.
Wow, what did they run before?
I'm not sure, but they ran a 12.7-inch rotor before, and now they're moving up to a 15-inch rotor.
Wow.
I'm pretty sure the big brake kits for my Fiesta are a 12.7-inch brake rotor.
For your tiny hatchback.
Yeah, that are designed to fit under 16-inch wheels. But that makes sense, because the old wheels, I'm pretty sure, were 15-inch steelies.
And now, these are, what you said, 17s?
Apparently they're 18s.
18-inch BBSs.
Yeah.
See, that's going to change things up. And honestly, I think the guys who are really going to benefit from this the most, from these used parts, are the drag racers.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, drag racing is considerably different.
Well, I just think having a sequential gearbox available cheaply.
I mean, I wouldn't be surprised to see a lot of the, you know, pro touring guys picking these up and putting them in their old freaking hot rod drag cars.
Yeah.
You know, because at this point now it's NASCAR technology. It's not some foreign, you know, weird shit. No, I got a NASCAR transmission in there.
And you know that anything NASCAR... is going to be torture tested to hell.
Your Southern was coming out there.
Yeah.
But I'm actually excited for NASCAR.
Yeah. You know what? I haven't been able to say that in a long time.
Browsing this real quick. Sorry, I have to bring this up. One thing that just blew my fucking mind was the car of yesterday, as we're calling it now, had a worm gear style steering gearbox, like a Jeep.
Like
like a heavy duty truck. And they're finally moving to rack and pinion.
God, can you imagine being at 190 miles an hour trying to keep a car straight with other cars inches from you with a Jeep steering gear?
Yeah. I mean, it's not from Jeep, but it's the same thing.
A Jeep style. Yeah, yeah. Can you imagine that? Because it's not like there's not a lot of play in those.
Even when they're good.
Yes. Even the best ones. I mean, honestly, that gives me a lot of respect for the guys who were doing it in the car of yesterday.
And it makes it makes a lot more sense when you see them driving. They're just always sawing at the wheel.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
And you thought it was because the rear end was loose. It's because the steering gear has so much slop in it.
It's like, oh, it's ridiculous. But yeah, and there's more changes than what I went over. I just kind of covered the big ones, a lot of small ones. Car and Driver has a really good breakdown of all the changes. If you want to go take a look at that.
But there's also a great interview with the NASCAR employee who put this together, available online.
Really?
Yeah, he's the one who talked about how it had kind of an airfoil design on the body. There's a guy, he's the guy who's been kind of overseeing the development of this new design.
Okay.
But he's done a few interviews because, you know, NASCAR fans watch very closely and are very resistant to change.
Mm-hmm.
So when something like this happens, they do a good job covering it because they don't want to lose their diehard fans,
right,
even if they're trying to gather the new ones.
Yeah. But yeah, between the cars, the fact that they're doing the occasional dirt circle now, or dirt oval. Oh,
they're going to bring this onto dirt.
They already did a dirt one this year.
That's cool.
Did you see
no,
that?
No, I didn't. Where's the dirt track?
No, they filled Bristol.
They did it on Bristol.
I think it was Bristol.
Because that's a short track.
I think it was Bristol.
Okay.
I could be wrong about that.
Yeah.
There's no NASCAR fans listening to this, so I'm not really worried about offending them. But
if they are, email in and correct us.
Yeah, so email us and correct us. But yeah, they filled it with dirt and raced NASCARs on it, and it was a shit show, and it was amazing. And they're also starting to race in rain, and they're doing more road courses. Yes.
Are they finally adding rain tires to the NASCAR repertoire?
They have rain tires now.
I love that because that was one thing I always loved about drifting is when the weather gets poor, they send it. Like the track has to be half flooded for them to stop drifting. And you know, it should be that way. You know, when you're racing, you should be able to adapt to that.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there is a safety concern at a certain point when you should call it.
I mean, there is, but I mean, look at Formula One.
Yeah, they have rain tires.
And that's an open cockpit car, bro.
Yeah.
You can do it in a NASCAR.
You can absolutely do it in a stock car.
Don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
I almost would feel safer in Formula One racing in the rain because all the Formula One tracks have big runoffs.
Well, and they have downforce like crazy.
And they have downforce. But just the track designs too, though. Like, they're designed so if a car goes off, goes in the gravel, you know, you're fine.
Yeah.
NASCAR, not so much. You're an inch from that wall at all times.
You were just talking about Bristol. I don't know if anyone here who's been to Bristol, Tennessee.
No.
Yeah. They're, you know, it's a short track.
Yeah.
It's a really short track. I wouldn't want to run off on a track like that.
No.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you're going to go into the wall.
I wouldn't even want to spin because I could spin when I was right behind somebody and they would still have enough time to loop all the way around and hit me.
Right. Yeah. There's something about short track, circle track racing that does still appeal to me actually more than NASCAR. Like I love the like local short track stuff, dirt track stuff.
Well, you see the coolest wrecks.
Yeah. I mean that too. Just the most, in my opinion, it's the closest wheel to wheel racing. Just people are literally just on each other's bumper for like 30 laps.
Yeah, and they're you know, Scandinavian flicking around these corners.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah, that people want to talk about Japan being the home of drifting.
Yeah.
If they didn't watch dirt track racing growing up.
Yeah.
Those guys are just in a constant drift.
Yep.
They're never going straight.
They're never going straight.
No.
Yeah.
They literally set their cars up with different size tires so that way they can drift around the corner better.
Like, yeah.
It's ridiculous. Speaking of dirt tracks?
It's a sad segue.
It's a sad segue because Bobby Unser, who raced Pikes Peak when it was dirt.
Yes.
When it was a dirt road, not track, but track. Unfortunately, he passed away last week at age 87.
And his family's been a you know, a big asset to the racing community for a long time.
Oh, huge.
Yeah, and he's I didn't know he set a world record at IndyCar. He was the first person to break 170 miles an hour in an IndyCar.
Yeah, let's go over in this Jalopnik article. They give a little highlight of his career, and there's things in here I didn't know about. You know, I'll admit I knew of the Unser family. I knew they were really good at racing. I knew that Bobby did Pikes Peak.
Yeah.
I know we have Unser Karting here in Denver.
Yeah.
But I didn't realize Bobby Unser was this crazy. 13 championships at Pikes Peak, including 6 straight titles from 58 to 63.
Which is just incredible.
That's amazing.
Winning six straight rally titles.
Yeah.
I mean, Colin McRae can't even boast that. I think he had 5.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, that's crazy. USAC national champion from 68 and 74. Indy 500 winner in 68, 75, and 81. That is a long stretch.
Yeah, that is a huge stretch of IndyCar. Which makes sense because it said he was the first driver to break 170, and he also had a qualifying at 195.
Right.
So there was clearly a time gap there.
Yeah, clearly. There was some technology gap there. Yeah, first driver over 170, fastest time in 72 at 195.95 miles an hour. International Race of Champions winner in 75.
Which is, that's amazing. America sent him to the Race of Champions in 1975, and right. He won.
Right, and 75 had some fucking good drivers around the world at that point.
Yeah, let's see, what, 75, that's when God, I'm blanking on their names now. The guys from Rush.
Is that when they were?
I think so.
Man, you're going to make me blank on their names too. Niki Lauda.
And
James Hunt.
Yep. Yeah.
Was that during that time? 1970s, yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, there were some good drivers in the world.
Yes.
You know?
And Mario Andretti as well.
Yeah. Yeah, Andretti.
Yeah.
So, the fact that Bobby Unser, who, according to this list so far, you know, IndyCar and Pikes Peak, went to go compete with Formula One drivers and shit and fucking beat them.
And won for America.
Yeah.
Which America doesn't usually win Race of Champions.
No, we don't.
Germany tends to.
Yeah, well.
And France, since Sebastian Loeb started driving for them.
And the Scandinavian countries occasionally.
Yeah, I mean, Finland is always on the podium.
Yeah. Yeah, all that stuff earned him inductions into the Indianapolis Motor Speedway Hall of Fame, International Motorsports Hall of Fame, National Sprint Car Hall of Fame, Colorado Motorsports Hall of Fame, and the Motorsports Hall of Fame of America. Yeah, I gotta say, like, it's really sad that he's dead at this, you know, at 87. Honestly, that's old, but not that old in this day and age.
Yeah.
But I gotta say, he did more in 87 years than most people could do in 300.
He did. He had a career that any race car driver, even one that's accomplished, would envy.
Yeah.
I mean, especially driving across multiple disciplines like this.
Right.
You don't really see a whole lot of guys who are doing rally and Formula Indy. One yeah. or Indy. At the same time, they're very different disciplines.
Yeah.
You don't see a lot of drivers who are doing both things like that.
No, and usually when you see it, you'll see drivers do cross-disciplinary things, and they're usually, good. They're
yeah.
not champions.
Yeah, they may be a champion in one discipline, but not in multiple.
Right.
And he's in museums for being champions in multiple.
Right.
You could learn all about his IndyCar career and never learn about him dominating Pikes Peak.
Right. I pretty much knew him from Pikes Peak and didn't really know he was so good at Indy.
Yeah. I didn't know that either. And I knew just was, because, you know, we're local Colorado guys, we know about Pikes Peak.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, like I said, sad to see him go, but he went out with a bang for sure. All right. Well, we're getting a little long, so I'm going to just briefly pass over. This is going to be the weirdest change of mood ever from somebody dying to somebody building a lawnmower out of a Ford Festiva. But just Google Ford Festiva lawnmower, and it will cheer you up from the sadness that we just did.
It did. I'm actually glad you did this article right after that one.
Yeah.
I was hoping you would do
it's
it
a little,
that way.
Little pick me up after some sad news.
Yes, because this is just genuinely amusing, especially because he even has like a fake John Deere logo on the side right. of his Ford Festiva.
Yep, green and yellow. It's from this YouTube guy, which apparently has 780,000 followers on YouTube, called Ginger Billy. So I'm sure a lot of people have heard of him.
Yeah.
I haven't. It's amazing to me in this world, somebody can have 780,000 followers on YouTube and I have no idea who they are. Even when they do automotive shit. Like,
yeah, I mean, that's
shocking.
It speaks to how fragmented things were or things are now. You know, right? It used to be that there were four networks.
Yeah, right.
And if someone was famous, everyone knew who they were.
Right.
But this is the same guy who it kind of blew up a few years ago. He built a chopper lawnmower with the mower deck and underneath the front wheel.
Oh God!
So it pushed shit around. And that kind of broke the internet for a while.
Okay.
But it seems like this Ford Festiva one might actually be better. And if you read the article, it says, you know, this guy's from Muggy, South Carolina, and you know, he got sick of getting baked in the sun while he was mowing his lawn.
Yeah. Makes sense.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, honestly, I would like want to go mow the lawn with this thing.
I would. I would absolutely. I'd volunteer to mow the lawn.
The thing about it, you have a radio.
Yeah.
You can have a beer.
You can have a beer with a cup holder.
With a cup holder?
Yeah. You have shade from the sun.
Yeah.
And hell, I don't know if he built it this way, but you could roll up the windows and have air conditioning.
You could. Yeah. I was just thinking of that. Like, I don't even know if Ford Festivas came with air conditioning. That was probably an option.
This thing probably has crank windows.
Yeah. I wouldn't be surprised. But yeah, just Google Ford Festiva lawnmower. It's worth a hoot. But that's all I'm going to say about that, because we actually have viewer mail.
We got our first viewer mail.
Yeah. I got to play like maybe like the Final Fantasy victory song.
Yes.
Right now.
Yeah. We're going to have to find, or maybe the Pokemon. Do, 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 do.
Yeah. That'd probably be a better one, because I don't know if I'll get a copyright strike for that short of a music.
Yeah. There we go. 8-bit music.
Yeah.
Your way around copyright strikes.
So this email actually comes from an old buddy of mine, Nate. I worked with him, a decade ago when I worked at the junkyard. And he sent this in, and he has some questions about electric cars, like we were talking about with the SCCA stuff. So I'm going to read this. It's kind of a lot of questions, but I think we can boil this down. Nate writes, "You may be familiar with Rich Rebuild's YouTube channel, where he has described his experience buying salvaged Teslas, trying to obtain replacement parts from Tesla. Do you think other manufacturers will also implement similar restrictions? If so, do you think that cripples the ability for enthusiasts to do electric conversions or race electric cars without manufacturer support / approval? Also, the prices of these parts in the used market," because he's still working in the used car parts world, "is outrageous currently. I see wrecked Model S go through the auction for $15,000 to $20,000, even though they are badly damaged, because resellers know they can get a mint for the parts. Maybe thanks to the resistance from Tesla to sell parts to the public. The days of being able to buy and swap parts into whatever vehicle you like seems to be dwindling, and to me that would hurt enthusiasts the most. Perhaps the computer wizards will be able to hack factory software to allow transplants and modifications. Curious your thoughts. I'll be listening to the next episode." So first of all, thank you, Nate, for writing in.
Thank you.
And that kind of boils down to kind of the same stuff we've been talking about, of the way electric cars are going to change the modding and racing community.
Yes. And honestly, in this case, we're talking about the entire industry.
Yeah.
Which, you know, being in the parts industry, that's been something that, I've noticed. Because electric cars need fewer parts.
They do.
And by the nature of just basic economics, as electric cars proliferate, the parts industry will shrink.
Yeah, I could see that.
And, you know, right now you've got AutoZone, Advanced, O'Reilly, and NAPA as your big four aftermarket automakers, or right. Aftermarket auto parts manufacturers.
I know what you meant.
And I don't think that the market will be able to sustain all four of those as electric cars proliferate, because fewer parts are going to be needed.
Not only the fewer parts, like Nate said, and you had a good point right before the podcast, a lot of manufacturers are putting restrictions on selling these parts.
Yes.
So you said something about Nissan Leaf batteries, right?
Yes. So currently I work at Nissan selling parts, and I am not allowed to sell a Nissan Leaf battery to an outside shop to install. If you have a Leaf and you need a new battery, you have to bring it into Nissan, giving them a monopoly on that installation. And from what I understand, Tesla is doing similar things.
Mm-hmm.
While you can find aftermarket, you can find used Tesla parts because there's a lot of Teslas out there and a lot of people using self-drive when they shouldn't, mm-hmm. and they're being wrecked.
Right.
You know, they can lock everything out with software.
Yeah. I mean, literally with Tesla, they could do an over-the-air download to your car without your permission and lock you out of your car.
They can brick it just like a phone.
Yeah.
And that's definitely something that I think is a product of the novelty of electric cars at the moment.
I think that in particular is a product of Tesla being a technology company and not an automotive company.
Yes. That's a good idea. That's a good point.
They are a phone company that doesn't make phones, they make cars.
Yep, they make phones you can drive around in.
Pretty much, yeah.
And I think that's going to be something that we're going to see change because, you know, Tesla is a 15-year-old company? Are they even that old?
Not even that. Can't even be that old because that would mean I'm too old.
So, you know, Tesla, they haven't yet had to experience the realities of automakers that have been around for decades.
Mm-hmm.
And one of those realities is that other people are going to make parts for your vehicle.
Right.
Because there's always going to be a demand for cheaper aftermarket solutions.
Yeah.
Whether or not they fit the same standards as OEM.
They don't.
And they often don't. You're right. Occasionally you'll find a gem. But
yeah.
But typically your aftermarket parts do not meet the same standards as OEM parts.
Yep.
They, you know, for certain things, they're basically the same. You're talking about brake pads, brake rotors, you know.
Yeah, generally those will at least work.
Spark plugs, stuff like that. But when you're talking about anything that has to do with a proprietary electronic computer system,
mm-hmm.
like sensors.
Oh, God, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I worked at Nissan. You don't use aftermarket crank or cam sensors or mass airflow sensors. You get OE or you just have problems.
Right. And, you know, you can buy the BWD sensor from your O'Reilly that has a lifetime warranty and you can replace it 6 times.
Right.
Or you can buy the OE sensor, which unfortunately is egregiously overpriced,
mm-hmm.
and it'll work.
Right.
And I think we're going to see that kind of compromise kind of fold into electric car companies as they proliferate, as they become more mainstream, because it's just a compromise you have to make to keep more models on the road.
I think we'll see it with the likes of, you know, your Fords, your Kias.
Yeah.
Toyota already has it.
You can buy rebuilt or remanufactured
batteries and stuff like that. I think Tesla will keep a lockdown on all their stuff, and I think Tesla customers are fine with that for the most part.
For the time being.
There's your fringe customers, like he said, the Rich Rebuilds channel on YouTube.
Yeah.
Which is a guy who, at least he started out, I remember, just like rebuilding Teslas in his backyard.
Yeah.
It was amazing.
And Tesla hates him.
Oh, yeah. But it's just like the people that, you know, are rebuilding and hacking Apple products. And Apple hate them.
They do.
But that's a very small percentage of their customer base for both of those companies.
Yeah.
While your Fords, your Kias, your Toyotas, your Chevys, all those they're not the same people that, you know, will buy an iPhone and be fine with that.
Yeah.
They're Walmart Android people.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
They're like, no, just fix my, just get it fixed. I don't give a shit.
Well, and Ford and Kia and Toyota, you know, they've had enough cars to produce to where they have cars in the secondhand market now, enough of them to where, you know, there's people who are buying secondhand Fords, Kias, and Toyotas who've never had a relationship with this manufacturer because they bought it used. They bought it off Craigslist. They got it from used car lot. They just want a car that runs. And those people don't care if they have OEM parts.
Yeah, they don't.
And those people want something cheaper. They want to be able to fix their car and keep it on the road because they're the kind of people who will get rid of it and get something else if it gets to the point where they get a bill for a repair that is more than they want to pay.
Right.
You know, your Tesla owner right now, you're right. Your average Tesla owner, they're not scoffing at these bills.
No, exactly.
They're like, oh, okay, yeah, fix my car. They have a lot of disposable income. But once you see, you know, used car lots full of Tesla Model 3s and S's,
mm-hmm.
you see people who want just a car, because at that point an electric car will be the more affordable option, then you're going to have to see compromise, or else Tesla's going to lose market share in the secondhand market, and then they lose their name proliferation. Like, if you buy a used Ford and drive it around, you're still promoting Ford.
You are, yeah.
Even if you don't have a relationship with Ford, even if you never bought that from a Ford dealer.
See, I don't know, because I've always compared Tesla to Apple.
Yeah.
And I'm just going to keep making that comparison, but like...
It's a pretty good comparison.
Like, you don't see people with old iPhones. Or if you do, they're the stubborn people with a broken screen that are just like, no, I'm still using this thing, even though it's slowed down.
My wife still has an iPhone 6.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Is that old at this point? What are they on?
I think they're on like 11.
Oh, God. I can't say anything. I'm on a Google Pixel 3, and I think the Pixel 6 is coming out this year. So
yeah, I have a Galaxy S20 that was new, but I think there's like an S22 coming out. So
God, I remember the Samsung Galaxy came out. Like,
yeah,
the original.
Just the Galaxy. Yeah.
But this is not a phone podcast. Anyways, you know, the other thing he talked about is, you know, if you think this cripples the ability for enthusiasts to do electric conversions. And because of the price of salvage parts and stuff.
Yeah.
And I say yes and no. Clearly, there's a lot of people still doing Tesla swaps out there.
Yes.
Kind of see it cropping up a lot more and more. Yeah.
But we also have EV West.
We have EV West. We have, what was the company we talked about 4 podcasts ago that were offering the crate engine? Was that EV West?
It was an electric crate engine?
Yeah, that swapped into place of a Chevy 350. You remember that one?
Oh, I do remember that. I can't remember who made the company or who made it. I don't think it was EV West. I think it was somebody new.
Yeah, but I think companies like that are going to be the ones stepping in for electric conversions.
Yes.
I don't think people are going to be using used parts as much.
Yeah, and Tesla only has themselves to blame for that. They could make used conversions available if they wanted to.
But they could, but they...
But that's not something Apple would do.
No, and they just don't, they don't care. They don't, like,
it's
they're
not
in the
their market.
Yeah, they're in the process. They're in the business of building new cars. They don't.
Yeah.
They want their car to last a certain amount of time, and this is where I compare them to BMW. Of
yes,
they want their car to last a certain amount of time, and you get the new one.
Right. You want to dispose of it. That's why BMW is telling people to go 10,000 miles between oil changes right now,
because it saves the customer money while they own it.
Right.
And they know the typical BMW owner is going to only own their car for 60,000 miles.
Yep. And then they're going to trade it in for something else.
Right. So it seems like a better deal. They don't care what happens to the car after the first owner.
Right.
Because it's not their problem at that point.
Yeah. BMW is definitely guilty of that. Mm-hmm. And that's why, I mean, that's luckily all the best BMWs are 20 years old.
That's very true.
If you want to buy a good BMW, buy one that's 20 years old. And you know what? The maintenance really won't be that much worse than buying a new one.
It really won't, honestly. To kind of sum up Nate's question, like, I don't think the electric conversion is going to go anywhere. I think we're going to see more and more of it. I just don't think it's going to be done with used parts, because the only used parts you can get right now that are good anyways are Tesla.
Right.
And like he said, they're under lockdown.
Yeah.
You know, and... I think that's, it's going to actually like delay as many electric conversions as maybe would be being done right now. If you could get used parts, or if you could order parts from Tesla.
Yeah.
If you go to Tesla and be like, I want one of your awesome motors and controllers and batteries. And
yeah.
Like, here you go. Here's a kit.
Yeah. Here's a kit. Put it in your Porsche.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, honestly, that would give them a little bit better standing in the automotive world.
It would.
To enthusiasts.
But like you said, they don't care about enthusiasts.
They really don't.
Yeah.
It's not their business model.
Yeah.
You know, and one thing I'll give Tesla credit for is they came up with a product design and a product idea and a business model, and they stuck with it.
But what I think is going to happen with Tesla is I think at some point they're going to get a buyout offer from a legitimate established, I'm not saying they're not legitimate, but a more established automaker.
Yeah.
And I think they're going to take it.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised.
I think that, and once that happens, I think they'll be under the umbrella of that larger automaker operating under their rules.
Mm-hmm.
And when that, and those rules allow for aftermarket parts, they allow for conversions.
But you know, if you want to do an electric swap now, lithium battery packs have a shelf life. Buy a new one. Buy one from EV West. You don't want to use lithium. You know, you can buy a used Tesla motor, but you don't want to use battery pack.
Not really, no.
Because you're going to spend all that work putting it in, and then 5 years down the road, it's just going to break.
Yeah.
It's just going to be out of its life, out of its charge cycles.
Yep. Luckily, I think they have figured out ways to recycle lithium ion battery packs a little bit better now.
That is good.
Very good.
Because we're going to have a lot of lithium going to the junkyard.
Yeah. And well, we have a very limited supply of lithium.
Yeah.
Lithium is made in supernovas, if I recall correctly.
Wow. So we're going to have to start mining asteroids.
Yeah. So it's like, there's very limited amount of that shit, you know?
And it's also what we need to get out into space.
Yeah.
I mean,
which is also why SpaceX. SpaceX?
Yeah. SpaceX is Elon Musk's other company.
Okay.
Yeah.
What was the prize? The X Prize was the thing that some rich dude set up to get people to be more interested in doing independent space travel.
Oh, wow. Okay.
It was only like $1 million prize. It was ridiculously low for how much money you had to spend to get something into space.
Yeah.
But it got people encouraged people to like try to build rockets that weren't, you know, NASA.
Yeah.
And that kind of spun out, and now we have SpaceX and
Which is what we need. I mean, I know we're an automotive podcast, but as a species, we need to get out into space.
Yeah. No, we do.
If we want to survive. And I've heard the counter arguments, you know, that we're a pest species, and if we go out into space, we're just spreading our disease. But that's, you know, one cynical way of looking at it.
Right.
I think that humanity can be the vessel for something greater. And to do that, you know, we need to get out into space and prove that we can do more than just be petty apes on a rock throwing shit at each other. Personally, if I had $1 billion, I would perform the most elaborate practical joke of all time and just fake an alien invasion.
Yeah.
And then we could end nationalism overnight.
Yeah, we could.
Yeah.
Common enemy.
Yep.
There's plenty of sci-fi about that.
Yeah.
You know?
Just fake it, and then all of a sudden we have a justification to adventure out into the stars.
We should do a space podcast.
Let's do it.
Because I have a lot of opinions and a lot of enthusiasm about space.
Yeah. I mean, it is the future of humanity, if humanity has a future at all.
Right.
I think it's off this rock.
I think space mining is going to be the great next gold rush.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And I think as the same thing as like the gold rush and all sorts of like big leaps like that, there's going to be a lot of technical innovation, a lot of, okay, I can't word this in any way, death.
Yes.
In that, and a lot of risk.
Yes.
A lot of reward.
Yes.
But
that's how the West was settled.
It was.
We wouldn't be sitting here right now if a bunch of people didn't load up in covered wagons or jump on a ship and sail around the Cape of Good Hope.
Right.
In order to get to the West.
And if I'm being honest, I think that's the only way we avoid disastrous global warming is from mining asteroids, getting the resources, and putting them to good use to reverse the shit we've done so far.
Yes, because if we are actually going to replace internal combustion with battery power, like you said, we need as much lithium as we can get our hands on.
Right.
Because nickel ain't going to cut it. We're going to need some nickel too.
Yeah.
We're going to need as many conductive metals as possible.
Not only that, when you make lithium ion batteries, you require cobalt. Cobalt is even rarer than lithium. So, like, we got to go somewhere else to get these things. Otherwise, we'll strip mine the entire Earth trying to save the Earth.
Yep. It's like, oh, right. We have enough to run the entire Earth on electricity now. but you can't stand anywhere and you can't breathe the air.
Yeah. It's like, so there's got to be some compromise, but I feel like we're getting too political. I really don't know when climate change became political, but that's a topic for another time.
Well, yeah, that's going to be a political discussion to delve into that.
Right?
Yeah.
Everything's politics.
It all comes back to Newt Gingrich.
I want a t-shirt that says everything's politics.
There we go. Yeah.
And that'll be some weird like side religion of speed merch.
Yeah.
The politics
Everything
merch.
Is politics. Yep. I like it.
For real, though. I know me and Chris talk a lot about politics on this show. And if you have different politic views, like, we don't hate you. We want to have a conversation with you. Like,
yes.
We're not sitting here, like, these people are idiots and we're right and you're wrong. Okay, drinking wine and podcasting, maybe that's the best idea.
We should stick to beer.
Yeah. But listen, guys, we love all y'all. We appreciate you listening. We appreciate you sending in viewer mail. If you want to complain to us about our politics, that's contact@religionofspeed.com.
Yep.
I'll read those on air. I'm not afraid. But, you know, this is all a discussion. We're in a weird time right now.
We are.
We're talking about electric cars and NASCAR at our grassroots motorsports podcast.
Yes. In the same podcast, we talked about electric cars and NASCAR.
Yeah.
And hydrogen fuel.
It's a weird time right now.
And space. Yeah.
And politics.
Yeah.
And listen, it's a strange time. Yeah. We're going to get through it together.
From the carbureted V8 to the lithium ion thrust engine.
But you know what? When it all comes down to it, we're all car enthusiasts.
Absolutely.
We're all in this together. And I think we can end it on that.
Let's end it on a positive note.
Right? Chris, as usual, thank you for joining me.
Always a pleasure, Matt.
And I want to thank the band Wheels for the use of their theme song. You can find more of their music at wheelstheband.bandcamp.com. Give them a shout. They're an amazing band. I hope to see them touring here soon. And until next time, peace out.